We are happy when things happen as we want. And we are not happy when they don't happen as we want. So, the I in us is persisting there. So when the I is persisting there, you are either happy or unhappy, according to the conditions outside. Means your happiness will depend upon the external happenings. So, we become slaves of the external conditions and external happenings. Now suppose we say, I have no like or dislike of my own. I leave everything to God. I am happy if God does anything or if He does not do anything for me. In that case, we don't expect anything even to happen, either good or bad. Only expectations make us either happy or unhappy. If you don't expect anything to happen in whatever way you want, there's no question of happiness or unhappiness resulting from it. Suddenly something happens without expectation or anything. It may affect us. If it is good for us, we'll be happy. If it is bad for us, we'll be unhappy. Now, how to remain unaffected by that? That is the main problem with everybody. To remain unaffected by whatever happens outside us, even within us also. If we are always conscious that whatever happens, happens by God's will only, we will remain unaffected. We accept everything as happening by God's will, and because it happens by God's will, it must be for our own good. God cannot mean ill of us. He always means well of us. So, because it happens by His will, it must be for our own good. If we have this firm conviction, we will not be affected adversely by whatever happens. If something happens that gives us extreme joy, we will not be too much elated. We will remain cool and calm. And if something very bad happens, there also we will remain cool and calm. Though momentarily we may be affected, but we will not be shaken by that. So surrender to God's will is the way to remain happy and peaceful in all conditions and circumstances. Now how can we get this surrender? First condition for surrender is to have God's remembrance always, ceaseless remembrance of God. When we remember God automatically, it will follow that we accept God as the absolute power. So, we accept that whatever happens in the world, in the universe, anywhere in the universe, through any form, either through this form or any other form, it happens only by His will. And when we know that every incident, if we see the hand of God, we will not blame anybody. Now, if something happens, somebody puts something in it, breaks down. A costly thing, you can say. Immediately we blame that person. You careless fellow, you broke it. You don't know the cost of it. It's very costly. Who will bear the cost of it? go on shouting. But if you are cool and calm and able to see the hand of God behind it, you say, whatever has taken a form without to change that form one day or other, means whatever has born has to die. Knowing that, we will be calm and quiet. Some people may ask, why should the form change this way? Why should it break by falling down from so-and-so's hand? That's not a question to be asked at all. We need not worry how the change takes place. As long as we are conscious that the change takes place by God's will, we will not be unhappy. So, surrender means accepting everything that happens as happening by God's will, by God's power. And no individual is responsible for anything that happens anywhere. You will say, God alone has done this through so-and-so, you can say. So-and-so has become an instrument for doing this, which is God's will. It may be a good thing from our point of view, or it may be a bad thing from our point of view. And if this is taught, somebody immediately will ask a question, if somebody does something bad, should you take it as God's will? When everything happens by God's will only, there is no question like that to arise at all. Whether it is good or bad, this good and bad are only relative terms and are labeled by us when you are ignorant of the fact that it is God who does everything. As long as we do not accept God's will as supreme, we say, oh, he has done this, this is good, that is bad. So we will be able to say, it just happens by God's will. If you put a label as bad, it is your own label because you are ignorant. If you say it is good, that's also your own level. Then this is happening outside, what about within ourselves? So many things are going on within ourselves. Mind is always thinking of this, thinking of that. If we are able to accept that there is nothing but God, at least intellectually, we will be able to say that every form that we see before us is God. Every change that takes place is God, by God's power. And every movement is God's movement. Every emotion is God's emotion. And even the question of feeling, either sorrow, grief, or anger, all these are emotions coming in the sphere of God's existence only. There the I has no place at all. All these are happening in the universal existence, the absolute existence of God. We are only a speck in that existence. And by mistake we take the responsibility for these emotions as ours, and for actions as ours. If we remove that sense of why, we will be able to say just things are happening. So many things are going on in the universe. The breeze, clouds come and go, sun always shines. Emotions like anger, grief, happiness, unhappiness, they also take place in this universal leela. So we don't identify ourselves with anything. in the universal manifestation, we look at them as dispassionate witnesses, unaffected by whatever happens. We know it belongs to nature, and nature has its own way. It is, things are happening in the nature as willed by God. There the I is completely eliminated. So our effort must be to eliminate this senses of I-ness. Everything is yours, O God. Everything is yourself. Everything is you. Everything is yourself. There's nothing like I or mine. You practice this from the very beginning. If some layman heard it, he would immediately remark, we can remain idle, God will do everything. That will be the first impression when they hear about surrender.
Is it possible to become idle, sir?
That is the question. That is the question they will ask straight. God will do everything, and it is God who does everything, so we can afford to be idle.
Whatever, it is not possible.
And whether you can remain idle or not is the question. There's no harm in asking a question by that. So the question is, how can we remain idle? Will we be able to remain idle? They also say, if you go on preaching surrender, there will be absolutely no initiative in life. No urge to discover something new. But again, we forget that when this question comes, the I and we remain strong. Whether I should take an initiative. The purpose of surrender is to eliminate this I. If it is completely eliminated, then the question will not arise. So what should we do to eliminate that I? Now we are only 50% conscious, 50% surrender. Accept that everything is done by God. So whatever is done by us is not done by God. We are doing it. Because to remain idle is also our part. That we are doing it. We are going to do it if God is doing everything. So we are giving only 50% mark to God. പച്ചന്മാരിന് കുറച്ച് കൊണ്ടുവരാൻ പറയാം. പിന്നെ പറയാം, 10-ാം തീയതിക്ക് ഹൈദരാബാദ് പോകുന്നതാണ്. പിന്നെ പറയാം പോകുന്നതാണ്. So to make it 100%, what you must develop is the consciousness that even every emotion, every desire, every initiative arising from us is prompted by God only. Suppose you are given a desire to go from here to Kanchanagar or take a trip to Mangalore. You must never feel that it is our desire. God has prompted me to go to Mangalore. That must be our language. God wants me to try to make such and such a research on such and such a subject. He prompts me. If he, this is the feeling, he will not be worried about the success or failure of his research. And it will be 100% successful because it is prompted by God. And the ego is not there at all. So surrender does not mean or will not lead anybody to remain idle. It will be only making everybody's work perfect in the sense that it will not be tinged by ego sins. The ego is completely eliminated and God's power alone is working through one who has absolutely or completely surrendered to Him. So the work should be perfect. And those who start work, who have some sankalpa to do something according to God's promptings, suppose they do only halfway and not able to proceed further, they won't feel sorry about it. They say, God prompted me to take up this work. God has stopped me here. He doesn't make me proceed further. So why should I worry about it? I don't consider it as failure at all. God may have something else in view. So, even if you fail, we are not worried about it. Even if you have to stop halfway, we will not be worried about it. So in any case, whether it's a success or failure, we will remain cheerful, happy, because we are not worried about the results. That is the effect of surrender, perfect surrender. First, when we hear the word surrender, it comes to our mind a sort of defeatism. When somebody, some enemy who is more powerful attacks us, we raise our hand, oh, I surrender to you, don't attack me. That is the impression you all get first. That surrender is due to weakness. Weakness, at the same time, recognizing the more powerful enemy's strength. But this surrender is the victory over the ego sense. The ego, which was persistent and claiming the responsibility for doing all these actions, is subdued. You are gaining victory over them. And you need real strength for it. What is the strength? Strength got by chanting of God's name and meditation on it. We draw the necessary strength from the divine within to overcome the strength of the ego. Finally, when the ego is subdued, God alone works, and we have attained the state of perfection. So surrender is not due to weakness, but it is due to real strength.
Do we surrender sometimes due to fear also? Due to cowardice?
That is cowardice. That is not victory, that is defeatism. You are being defeated by some higher power.
Submission, not surrender.
You are
covered.
That is submission. But this is different from surrender.
We were talking the other day, the differences in Papa's temperament and Mataji's temperament and their way of life. But point they were agreeing and point they were disagreeing. You remember, no? We discussed one day.
A couple of days.
One day I noted down. Let us see how beloved Papa and Mataji live together most lovingly and harmoniously, in spite of their many acute differences in nature, supported by many positive, agreeable points. There are differences in nature, but the most important factor was their positive points agreeable to each other, and the love that prevailed between the two. The foundation of love was so strong that no differences could shake that foundation. Now, if you want to have an idea, you just bring before your mental vision Papa and Mataji standing before you. Bring before you beloved Papa and Mataji standing side by side. What a beautiful scene. They are standing before you. Now you see from a close quarters, they are both of the same height. Both have very fair skin. Both have bright and cheerful faces. Both clad in pure white clothes. Both have smiles on their faces. Both with innocent smiles. Both childlike in their ways. Both are respected and loved by all. Both are engaged in activities for the benefit of all. Both were born in Saraswat families. Both speak the same language, that is Konkani. Both lived householder's life for a while. Both were prompted to renounce family life for attaining the highest goal of life. Both attained highest realization.
They are all similarities.
Both had taken the same path, that is chanting of God's name, that is devotional path. Both were not interested in the so-called education. Both yet attained the highest wisdom. Both were fearless and stuck to their convictions. If they knew something was right, they would not deter from that conviction. They would not change it for anything. Both were tied together by a strong cord of love that no external differences could break. Both in certain occasions argued vehemently on the points of differences without in any way breaking the cord. Both found that the effect of such serious arguments were like the mark on water made by blow of a stick that would disappear in no time. These were the binding factors. Now let us see where there are differences. Papa was born in a Purnima day. Mataji was born on Amavasya day. Papa stopped his studies after he got a diploma in textile engineering, whereas Mataji stopped going to school when in the fourth class. Papa's life was smooth in his early days, whereas Mataji's early life was full of turmoil. Papa was not very happy after marriage, whereas Mataji was very happy after marriage. Papa's life partner lived long, whereas Mataji's life partner passed away soon, after 7 years. Papa had only one daughter, whereas Mataji had two sons. Papa got vairagya due apparently to the repeated failure in worldly life. Apparently due to. The reason was God's grace. Whereas Mataji got vairagya after her husband passed away. Papa did not have to search for a guru, whereas the guru came in search of him. Whereas Mataji had to search for a guru and pray to God. Papa's daughter easily accepted and appreciated his new life. Whereas Mataji's son, even after years, could not accept her as universal mother. They could not, even after so many years. Papa's daughter accepted him as guru, whereas Mataji's son did not recognize her greatness. Papa was a little calculative in spending, whereas Mataji was liberal to the extent that even if she had no money to give, she would borrow and give. Papa was against borrowing money, whereas Mataji wanted to meet the situation even by borrowing. Papa was careful and even wanted to check Mataji's liberality, whereas Mataji wanted to spend liberally and expected Papa to provide the funds necessary. Papa was enjoying celebrations and encouraged in the expansion of the ashram, whereas Mataji opposed to both. She did not encourage expansion or celebrations. Papa readily agreed to the devotee's request for any expansion in the ashram, whereas Mataji vehemently opposed such ideas. Papa overruled Mataji's opposition and went ahead, whereas Mataji went even after Papa took up the project against opposition, when she wholeheartedly cooperated. That is the beauty. She would vehemently oppose a certain proposal, say, starting of the school, for example. Many devotees came and requested Papa, these children here are going without studies, so we must start a school. And they said they would donate for the building. The proposal was known to Mataji. She came and said, Papa, we should not start all these new things. People may offer money now, but who is going to maintain all those things? It is going to be a big responsibility for the ashram. She would tooth and nail oppose the entire proposal. But having given a promise or having agreed to the request of the devotees, Papa would say, see, let us have it. Let the devotee be satisfied. Once she agreed to, or when Papa finally wanted that way, she would wholeheartedly support the whole venture, as if she herself fully agreed with it. Usually what we do, if we do not agree with something, and we are forced to cooperate with it, if something goes on, you will say, oh, that day itself I say is not good. You would just point out the accusing finger there. She would never do it. If there was anything wrong, she would take the responsibility on herself and wholeheartedly support the scheme. Mataji then wholeheartedly cooperated in working out the project, as if she had not raised any objection at all. Papa was always very soft-spoken,
Shri Ram, Shri Ram, Shri Ram. All specific differences in Kapha and Matan. Kapha often used to say, if anything happens, he says, God's will be done. And if anything used to happen, he says, God will arrange it in his own way. But if it is left to Mataji, he will say, Papa, you must do it that way. It's not a question of leaving it to him to decide. You must do it. And if any sadhaka was found lack in his sadhana, he would say, Mataji, whereas Mataji gave importance to self-effort. Sadhakas must strive, and she used to take sadhakas to task if they were slack. But in case of Papa, he said, God will prompt them to do it. Unless they are prompted by God, they will not be able to do a sadhana. On certain occasions, he has also expressed that if Papa did not prompt them, how can they do sadhana? He would also say, when she was a little resigned. Papa regarded God as Ram, whereas Mataji regarded God as Papa. Papa saw visions of God. Papa had visions of God as Krishna, Buddha, Christ. Whereas when Mataji was asked if she had any vision, she said, God only as Papa. She has seen only Papa, or God in the form of Papa only. Papa played the part of a child and servant, whereas Mataji played the part of a mother more. Especially when they came to Papa, she was more a mother. Though she said she was a child of everybody, but she played the part of a mother more. Papa used to say, everything is done by Ram only. Whereas Mataji strongly felt, Papa can do anything and everything.
Swamiji, in the book with my master, Papaji is very often he telling Ram's will be done. Anytime with the conversation going on, there is no actual need to say Ram's will, he needs to come out just in the middle, Ram's will be done.
Ram's will be done, that's what he said.
Yeah,
everything attributed to Ram. But when Mataji used the same expression, she said, Papa can do anything, Papa will do everything.
Yeah.
Papa can do anything. That
maybe
is the
really, Ram used to be next to him. Was Ram as if sitting next to him?
Ram is there within him and everywhere about him.
But he stood, Papaji used to say that Ram troubles me a lot. I give him sugar candy to shut down.
He can come in any any person or a child.
Sugar,
he can be person, and also he can play the part of the impersonal aspect of God. So he is personal as well as impersonal. That's why he used to play with Ram. Ram troubled him so much, so he put a piece of sugar candy, he kept quiet. Papa, even after realization, used to cling on to certain norms, as if getting up early morning, sitting for meditation, like that. Whereas Mataji was for going beyond all norms and enjoy perfect freedom. Papa never told a lie and was against anybody telling a lie for any cause. Tell only the truth. Mataji said she would tell a lie if it could save somebody. And there were cases here, the workers would do some mischief. And if it was serious, the case would reach Papa. And when it reaches Papa, Mataji knows it will be serious. The judgment will be something serious. So, when Papa was taking up the matter, Mataji would slowly go there. And Papa was furiously asking these people, why did you do it? Why did you do it? Then Mataji would just intervene and say, I have asked them to do it. Just to save that person from the situation. And Papa knew that it was not right. But because Mataji had said he could not go do anything else. And afterwards he would warn Mataji, you are trying to save those people from these situations, but that will make them jump into a deeper well afterwards. Papa, during his sadhana days, fasted very often and for long days, whereas Mataji could not fast at all. But her food was so small in quantity, it was almost like plastic. Papa wandered all over India during sadhana period, but Mataji did not. He was stuck to this place only. Mataji did not, Papa did not worship any picture or idol of God. Though he was concentrating on the idol of Lord Krishna, he did not think of worshipping or doing puja or anything like that. Whereas Mataji worshipped many photos and photos of saints and gods. Photos, idols, she used to worship all those from her childhood. Papa had only one guru, whereas Mataji had taken initiation from many, but fully knowing that all gurus were one in different forms. It should not be taken that she had many gurus. Very honest. Yes. Papa was very optimistic. This, he would think only on the positive side. But Mataji was often pessimistic. He used to even say, sometimes he would tell afterwards, not then and there, we're going to board a plane. What will happen? A sort of pessimistic attitude used to be there. And afterwards he would say, console herself, Papa is taking your office, why should he worry? That counteracts that afterwards. But when she left things to Papa, she was sure he would do everything okay. Till then, just a little, a short time of pessimism was encouraging. Papa had always a positive thinking, whereas Mataji was often had negative thinking. Example, during air travel, coming here, during air travel before boarding the plane, she would think if the plane would meet with a crash, what? And again she would console herself, Papa is taking care of it, why should you worry? Papa never suspected anybody without sufficient proof. If somebody reported against somebody, he's stolen something, Papa will not take him to be a thief. He'll find out whether it is true or not. Then only he'll call him and ask him. Whereas Mataji entertain suspicion on many and sometimes even accuse them also. She used to take them to talk and used to hard words also. But afterwards, if they found she was, the person was not guilty, she would even apologize. Both she was prepared to do. Papa in the ashram took the responsibility of taking care of the spiritual needs of devotees. When the ashram was started, they had distribution of labor, as they say. Mataji told Papa, you look after the spiritual side of the devotees. I will look after the physical needs of the devotees. Giving accommodation, giving food to them, and all other needs would be taken care of by them. So in the beginning of the ashram, Papa took the responsibility of taking care of the spiritual needs of the devotees, whereas Mataji took the responsibility of taking care of their physical needs till Papa Samadhi. Afterwards, he took care of both. Papa did not care for absolute cleanliness, whereas Mataji was for absolute cleanliness. And start with that, Papa was also taken care of with absolute cleanliness. Spotless cleanliness was there. If any Papa's cloth, upper cloth or shirt or dhoti had any speck of dust in it, he would immediately change it. Papa usually ate his food very fast and had to be often told to go slow. He started eating it very, very fast. But those who were serving had to say, Papa, somehow indirectly make him slow. Whereas Mataji ate very slowly and leisurely.
They didn't take part.
We used to sit together and sometimes we start talking things. By the time we get up, it'd be 1 hour to finish lunch.
Usually,
hands will
be dry, I think, every time.
Yes.
Every day,
hands
will be dry.
Papa was often carried away by the devotion of the devotees. They could make him even change his earlier decisions. Carried away by the appeal of the devotees. They would say, Papa, this should be done, this, that should be done, that way, and all that. Papa would agree to anything. But when Mataji was not at all, she would not be carried away by the so-called devotional devotees. This is all humbug, you say. Devotees were afraid to press their views to her. They would never press her to do anything. She would say, frankly, you all come and say this and that. Tomorrow you will not be here. You will not take care of all these things. What are you going to do? Whereas Papa, they are very anxious to have it. Why not permit them? That was the attitude. Papa always talked about the brighter side of things, about the good things done by others. Papa, when talk about somebody, he always talk about the good aspects of somebody, or about good aspects of anything that is to happen. Whereas Mataji talked more about the darker side, that is, about the mistakes others had done. They must have done so many things good, but she would point out the mistakes, and she would always explain it. Unless we point out the mistakes, how can they set them right? If we go on extolling the good things they had done, their ego will be bloated. So we should point out their mistakes also. That was her argument. Papa had often expressed that he wanted to live long but passed away early. Papa never said that he wanted to drop the body so soon. When somebody asked him, Sandra, she is not anxious to drop the body. She has left it to Ram. That was his attitude. Whereas Mataji wanted to pass away early, but lived longer. Papa's physical suffering before Mahasamadhi was only for a very short time, only for 1 hour. Whereas Mataji's physical suffering continued for 9 months before her Mahasamadhi. Papa's Mahasamadhi was at 7 in the evening, whereas Mataji's Mahasamadhi was 7 in the morning. Papa's body was kept for a day, waiting for the many devotees to arrive. Whereas Mataji had given instruction that her body should be disposed of immediately. Papa often cut jokes and enjoyed jokes, whereas Mataji only enjoyed jokes but was not used to cutting jokes. This is what I remembered about their...
In Sagana days, Papa is not sleep for so many days. Whereas Mataji was sleeping, she was wanted to sleep also.
That's all. She never... I mentioned only fasting. Sleep also should be added there.
Swami, I want to ask you, Mataji told the last when you were reading that war has broken out. War broke.
Yeah.
What is the clear meaning of that?
War broke out means
there was something. Oh yeah, I was not able to stay here, Papa was able to stay like that. So and then Mataji told
she didn't explain what it meant, but from the happenings later, it was a regular fight. Fight means two forces. Mataji was seriously ill. That is one aspect.
Mataji ill after this happened?
After this happened. For next morning.
Perhaps it affected her.
It must have affected her. Don't know how it has affected her. But she said, this much, that's what we didn't explain. Or that was
the
not
same night she told it.
That was not the occasion to ask for explanation.
Same either. Night she told.
Same night.
Next day only she felt
it. Next day.
So, perhaps in her mind.
She must have felt it intuitively.
Yeah.
That are going to affect her life altogether. Yeah. It was a regular fight. She was. I was really surprised. The next morning when I came there, she said she could not get up. What is time now?
5:40. 5:40.
Sorry? 5:40. 12 hours ago. Mataji was talking about renunciation, but she never wanted anybody to renounce anything externally. If anybody said, I am going to renounce everything, she would say, what are you going to renounce? You may renounce your home, you may renounce your father, mother, all the property and all that. When you go to Himalayas, you will try to build a house for you, at least a cottage for you. You will find a place where you can get your food. And what have you renounced? So live wherever you are, but give up the sense of I and mine. That is the renunciation. She was going on hammering on that point.
Well, Mataji wanted to find a way for sadhana to get easily realization without any doing sadhana.
That was mother's heart.
Mother's heart.
She didn't want them to go to the Himalayas, starve, and spend sleepless nights, all these difficulties should be avoided. They must be given such a blessing that they are able to realize God wherever they are, without doing intense sadhana. That was the mother's heart. But Papa said, nothing doing. If you want a baby, you must get pregnant, you must stay for 9 months, keep the child for 9 months and then deliver. No shortcut. Renunciation is actually, when we are in a fit of vairagya, we may say, call it renunciation. But actually it amounts to temporarily giving up certain things for the sake of accepting everything later. We give up small things, finally to accept everything as ours. So in the beginning you may call it renunciation, but ultimately it ends in accepting everything as your own or as God's. Vinoba Babaji, when he came here, he told a funny story. A Mahatma was giving a discourse, sitting on a platform, lot of people in the audience. He was talking about bhakti, jnana and vairagya. One person, purely materialistic, came, climbed the stage. He must have come not to revere the Mahatma, but perhaps to get something material, something to be done for material success. As soon as he came near the Mahatma and was about to prostrate at his feet, the Swami himself got up and touched his feet. Everybody was surprised. And the person was also surprised. What are you doing, Swamiji? I am frosting at your feet, whereas you are touching my feet. Where am I? Where are you? You have renounced everything. I am pure materialistic. What is this you are doing? No, no, you are not right. Your renunciation is much more than what I have renounced. I have renounced only material things. You have renounced God Himself. So whose renunciation is?